On this outro, we've got to get a pack of blacks and a beat CD. Get your freestyles ready, baby. I have questions. Have you ever freestyled?
I am not going to do it now.
Oh, please don't.
I can freestyle.
You can. You say you actively can. Okay.
I actively can. I do it well. But what always happens is I get like 90 seconds in and then I make myself laugh and I can't keep going.
Ah, okay.
I got between 60 and 90 seconds worth of bars. And then I paint myself in a corner and I say something stupid and I laugh. But I can do it for like 60 seconds.
Okay. I'll give you that. All right. Have you ever smoked a pack of blacks?
Black and Milds?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have.
Nice. Okay. So you're like kind of there.
Do the damn thing. Keeps on my neck, pocket full up in frames. When I'm in the mall, hoes just pause. I pop a few tags, give me that on the wall. Time to flip the work, make the block bump. Boys in the hood, call me Black Donald Trump.
That is bad out of hell.
How long did you say we weren't going to talk about it for, Taylor?
Yeah, I know, right? That was before I realized it's Caleb's favorite fucking album.
It is crazy. I will be putting this album back on.
After that shocking reception of Bad Out of Hell, we're going to move on to Kendrick Lamar's Good Kid, Mad City.
Yeah, so how you dug. All right. Tell me, do you have some facts on Good Kid?
I do. So, Kendrick Lamar was born Kendrick Lamar Duckworth, June 17th. I knew it. Caleb, I'm sure you might know, you might not know, the butler on DuckTales, his name was Duckworth.
What?
And what? He was a dog.
And why are we excited about it? I like how you're like,
because
yeah.
I've never encountered...
never heard that in real life, you know?
Yeah, so I wasn't expecting Duckworth. I like that he dropped that and just went by Kendrick Lamar. It's a much catchier name. And he reportedly grew up around gang members, one of his best friends being in the West Side Bloods, and his father being one of the gangster disciples. So Lamar's middle name, that's when you're halfway naked. Middle name was given to him in honor of Eddie Kendricks of the Temptations. So you got that music influence in it. He grew up on welfare and in Section 8 housing. And in 1995, Lamar actually watched Tupac and Dr. Dre film their video for their single California Love, which proved to be a significant moment in his life. California Love. And then they're all driving the Mad Max shit. That's cool. he was reportedly a shy and quiet child.
I think that might have been my least favorite Jamie White thing I've ever seen.
No, let me welcome everybody to the
world. Oh, it got worse. Okay.
B-I-G-P-O-P-P-A. I'm just throwing them all out there now.
Oh, no.
Federal agents married to the flagrant. Tap my cell and the phone in the basement. So Kendrick Lamar attended Centennial High School in Compton and was a straight A student, which is a commonality with Lauryn Hill, which we're going to hit on some more here. And I think we all know what that's going to be. In 2004, at age 16, Lamar released his first mixtape entitled Youngest Head Pretzel, In Charge, Hub City Threat, Minor of the Year, under the pseudonym K-Dot. This mixtape garnered good buzz and recognition, which led him securing his first record contract with Top Dog Entertainment and would release his second mixtape, Training Day, 2 years later. Lamar came up alongside other West Coast rappers, J-Rock and Ya Boy. And Lamar would open for veteran rapper... Fuck, I lost something. I'm operating off some old notes. Oh, no, here we go. Okay, yeah, I'm back on board.
These notes are a product of their time.
So Lamar would open for veteran rapper The Game and would generate more buzz after a live performance of Charles Hamilton's rap battle performance. Have you ever heard of this? Charles Hamilton's
Okay. No.
He began rapping a verse over the instrumental to Milkbone's Keep It Real, which would later appear on the track called West Coast Wu-Tang.
Mm.
And that kind of got his name out there. In 2011, Lamar would begin writing what would become Good Kid, Mad City, described as a short film by Kendrick Lamar that winds up being an intimate look at his teenage experiences in the drug-fueled streets and gang lifestyle of Compton. It was welcomed with widespread acclaim and debuted at number 2 on the U.S. Billboard 200. And in 2020, Rolling Stone ranked Good Kid, Mad City as the 115th on the 500 greatest albums of all time, being ranked significantly higher than Bad Out of Hell.
Whoa!
Bad Out of Hell was like 300-something.
Wow! Yeah.
One critic praised the album's take on difficult subject matter by stating, "Any hesitation about the horror of it all is quickly wiped away by Kendrick's mix of true talk, open heart, open mind, and extended hand."
Mm.
The meaning of behind the acronym Mad City was debated, and Lamar kept its meaning hidden before admitting the acronym has two meanings: My Angry Adolescence Divided and My Angels in Angel Dust.
Mm.
That's what I got for some background info. Good Kid, Mad City. This was a ride. This was a ride.
A short film, some would say.
And yeah, I mean, so what I can say first off is this is the most time I've copied and pasted stanzas, mm-hmm. like entire pieces. I couldn't break it apart, which was really, really cool. I don't think I've ever, I can't compare him to another rapper. Is
mm-hmm.
We'll get into it. Because I'm going to hit everything as we go. So we got, Shireen, Master Splinter's daughter, which I was hyped as fuck for.
I knew you would.
Because I was like, is this a concept album about some Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? And Splinter's got a daughter? Which begs the question, did he bang a rat or did he bang a human?
How does it happen?
Who's going to give birth? Who's gonna sire Master Splinter's child? I think he'd have to bang a woman.
Yeah.
And if a human.
A human woman.
Anyway.
There are theories.
So we have an open. Oh, really?
No, I don't know.
I don't. We can.
Tucker Carlson's married.
We can circle back to the Master Splinter of it all later. We'll get to mm-hmm. that. We had an opening prayer to start us off, and it's this ambient soundscape, which was cool. And then I just wrote, "We're back, baby! Strippers, cars, bravado! We're here! We're doing it! We're listening to it again!" I loved the interesting conversational storytelling, and I found myself nodding along to it instantly.
Mm-hmm.
I was listening to it and like getting into his way of conveying information. He makes a reference to Nextel phones, which I was like, "Oh yeah, I remember Nextel, Nextel Wireless."
You're so old.
Man, do you fuckers remember when you'd be on a contract for like 2 years on a cell phone, uh-huh. and I'd be like, renew, and we'll give you a new cell phone for free.
Yeah.
It doesn't fucking exist.
I know. They fucking changed it all, and it's a scam.
Get me back to Nextel. It's a fucking scam. I hate it. But it's a magic little screen that knows everything in the universe, so I guess not that bad. So then he's talking about catching feelings for this woman and ending up wifing her. Which we've talked about catching feelings before. I liked his reference to when this episode of Martin go off.
Yeah,
I remember Martin.
I was going to ask you. I was like, have you seen that?
I Martin was strictly forbade in the Driscoll house.
Okay, why? Did we have reasoning?
Could only imagine. we were a Cosby house.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The irony there is noted.
Yeah, there's there.
We watch a lot of Amen. Do you remember
they
Amen?
Were strictly Law and Order house.
Now, we didn't watch a lot of cop shows because my dad didn't want, you know, get home from work and he wants to watch more cop shows. Like, I get it. Anyway, I like the line, "Send a picture of her titties blowing up my texts. I looked at him and almost ran my front bumper into a vet." I've got two stories.
Oh my God. Okay. All right. Let me buckle in
for
these.
They're both innocent. So one was, I was in like 10th grade. I was in the back seat of a car. My brother's in the passenger seat. His friend's driving. And there's this girl walking into a Best Buy. And she is gorgeous. I know my brother's looking at her. And we legitimately went up on the sidewalk.
No.
Because the driver was looking at this girl too. Boom, 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 boom. Oh my God.
And then you hit her.
My next. Oh no, we did. She's alive and well.
Good.
And then within the first week of moving to Chicago, I straight up walked into active traffic because I was staring at a woman's ass. Like, I opened it wasn't like a oops.
Oh, you it said like Jesus take the like, wheel. Was, you're going to look at this ass, huh?
It wasn't like, oh man, that was a close one. It was like I got to sit down after that. I almost got hit by a fucking car. Should she ever hear this and put it together, I need that woman to know her ass is lethal.
You didn't bang on the car and be like, I'm walking here.
No, I was too shaken. It was a close call. I almost got seriously hurt because I was I can hear the concern
in your voice of yourself. Like, I almost didn't make it, guys. Like, I almost it didn't happen.
Yeah, that's gonna be in my highlight reel. If life is flashed before my eyes, they get to see like the top 10 times you almost died. Yeah. I guarantee that.
That's for sure.
I liked when he started that countdown in this song. That anticipation that was building up. The voicemail seems very natural.
Yeah.
I love this voicemail, and I noticed very quickly that this is going to be the skit.
Yep.
This is the skit that is going to unite the album.
Uh-huh.
I love this through line that we have of these skits.
Yeah.
Because I told you before when we started listening to it, that's not really my thing. But I think this is one of the best examples of it next to Miseducation. I think it was the...
I hear you.
It supports the album narratively, and I really...
It does like a lot of work.
And Domino's is a hot commodity. People really like... This person really wants his damn Domino's. There's no good way to say this, but I love the way black people curse.
I like that you knew
the
it.
Cadence
you knew
and
it coming
flow.
In. You said, I don't know how to say this.
I just love it. Like the casual, like, and then I was going downstairs, shit. Like, it's just a way that white people don't curse, and like, and you're coming after my motherfucking ass? Like, it's just, there's
where
a
my motherfucking Domino's at.
To it. Where my motherfucking it hits in a different way, and every time I hear, this is the perfect encapsulation of me loving the way black people curse.
It is, the thing is like, this is why people say, give black people something and they will make it beautiful. Like, the way we play with language still is so fun. I don't know. It's true. It's not a problem to name that and see that. We could do some really cool stuff with language. And it's just fun. Like, and it's just, we're playing. We just play. And it just happened.
Shit.
Shit.
And my last thing I have is zero mention of Master Splinter or the Ninja Turtles.
Okay. Okay, so to name the Master Splinter thing, the real thought is, it's Hood Rat, right? She's a Hood Rat. I love watching your whole body slump as you're like, fine, but what about the turtles?
Right.
Where is
this is actually the true origin story of Master Splinter.
Right.
I was my hopes were quickly dashed, but I was like, yo, if this is an album about Master Splinter's daughter, I'm going to be so fucking hyped.
See, now you need to put that into the world.
Well, and he does later call himself Kung Fu Kenny, so maybe he is a big Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle fan.
Let us know, Kendrick.
Come on, Kenny.
Drop a concept album. I'll support
about that. So this whole album, to me, has a very distinct sound that I just generally like, right? Like, I don't know how to describe it. Like, when we listen to Kanye, we're like, well, we just love that Chipmunk sample work, right? Like, we love that. But, like, something about this whole album has a very – they have distinct sounds that I found myself not having the vocabulary for. So that's just a thing that I think I'm going to note throughout this. So, okay, so you said that you watched Martin. I want to know, have you ever played the game – Black Card Revoked. Yes,
no.
I would doubt that you've played it because it's for black people. It is.
would I? Hang on, wait. Let me get. Can I hazard a guess?
Yes, just please do it. I love it.
Would I revoke your black card for liking Grease?
No, you.
Okay.
You would.
Oops.
You would. You would revoke my black card if I didn't know Martin well enough.
Oh, black card revoked.
Yep. And so, like,
that's the energy.
there's questions, and you have to know the answers. And if you don't know the answer to this classic Martin scene in this TV show, like, then your black card's revoked, and you only have, like, so many, slash you gain them. I don't really know how to play it that well. I played it once or twice. That's what made me think of that. I was like, I wonder if Jamie even knows that game exists. Because I think it'd be really funny to sit and watch white people play it. Especially those white people who sit and they're like, oh, like I'm kind of black. And I'm like, okay.
What about Martin season 4, episode 3?
Yeah, like what happens, right? Like, what are you going to do? It's actually really more for the people who look at me and be like, I'm blacker than you, Caleb. And I have to go, all right, we can fight if you want.
Do people say that to you?
You've never. People say that. You've never said that.
Because I'm not a fucking monster. Do people really say that to you?
Yeah.
Like white people say that to you?
Yeah.
Oh, get the fuck out of here. I'm mad. This is the first time I've gotten mad. I can see you
like you're mad. No. Yeah, that does happen often.
That's deeply upsetting. And I'm sorry that happened to you. Sincerely.
Yeah, that's just how it goes. So. Yeah. There's a line that says, I'm a professional porn star when I'm off the goose. And I was like, buddy, that's a little arrogant. Like, sex workers train for their work, right? Like, buddy, you're 16. Like, be real about what's going to happen here. I listen to Meatloaf. It's not going to. So that just got me. And I also did want to know if you know how to play dominoes. That's what happened for me.
I do.
You don't, but Taylor does. But
you mean like actual like
fives? Yeah. Do you know how to play fives?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No. It's not the stacking them up and knocking them over, Jamie. You white piece of okay.
Whoa!
But that's actually really all I have on this one. I love the intro of the call from the mom, and how this keeps coming up. Also, it works for the narrative and it lets you know that he's in the 11th grade, right? It lets you know that they're on food stamps. Kind of gives you this background.
Yeah.
This is a very much like a set the scene introduction to Shireen, who's a very important character. But also, we've got her cousin, Demetrius. Oh, we're learning about her family, right? We're kind of learning that like family history of gangbanging is there, right? And so we kind of recognize that Shireen is also not from a good place, or she's from the hood. So like that's a thing that's noted and kind of like setting the framework.
So just for any people who might not know what the hood is, Caleb, could you elaborate?
Okay. So for this specifically, we're talking Compton, right? So we're talking the not so great places of Compton that are going to be run down with projects. There's going to be a lot of gang violence, a lot of drugs, and that's what we're going to call it. And that means, for those who like don't really acknowledge it, this is often very cyclical, right? So when you're in the hood, it's really hard to get out of the hood, and your family has often lived in the hood for years and years and generations because you can't break the cycle. Once one of your family members gets hooked on crack, you spend a lot of money trying to help that and or, you know, lose money to crack, and then you don't have the money and you already can't get a job because you start gangbanging so you can make more money to afford the crack or to help pay the bills because the person who's supposed to be paying the bills is on crack, right? So like it's like all very cyclical, but then we also have crime, right? And we also have the police officers, and we touch on that in later songs where the police officers stop and are just hoping that you're part of a gang and hoping to kind of like create the police kind of function as another gang in the hood that allows for black men to be arrested and taken out of the neighborhood. And that's a lack of income there when it comes to your family and getting out of that hood, and also a lack of foundational values that you guys can like be a community together. So the hood is just that. Kendrick's from Compton, so that he's talking specifically about this time, and he'll name specific gangs and that kind of stuff. But yeah.
All right, cool. Thank you.
No problem.
And here's what I think the hood is.
Oh, yes, please.
I believe the hood is this. No. No, thank you. So next up, we got Bitch Don't Kill My Vibe. Mm.
This was the song I was listening to.
I was hoping it was this song.
Bitch Don't Kill My Vibe. We start with another prayer for forgiveness. I like the line, I can feel your energy from two planets away. Aliens, folks.
Oh, God damn it. God damn it. I hadn't thought about it.
We're never going to have an episode if there's not aliens. He says, look inside my soul and you can find gold and maybe get rich. And I was like, man, that guy thinks a lot of himself. Like, you see yourself as like golden. Your soul is golden, sir. I mean,
come on.
And then I like the way he switches up his rapping style. I don't know how to say that. Like, he varies the flow. I don't know which way to say
that
it.
That works,
like,
yeah.
He doesn't keep the same cadence or rhythm, and it's just... And it's buttery fucking smooth the entire time. Yes. It never feels jarring. Mm-hmm. It's just he takes you on this journey like, oh my God. Super, like, I don't know how to say this, that sounds super white, but just like the talent it takes to do that.
His lyrics are some of the best lyrics in which, like, when I'm looking them up, I immediately know how he's saying it. Like, I feel it in a way that, like, the rhythm is written in it, right? Like, you know it. And mm-hmm. even
yes,
it's distinct and yet like it's natural in the way the words work.
Yep, agreed, 100%. I like the line he says, "You can remain stuck in a box, and I'm gonna break out and hide every lock.
Yes!
Hide every yes! lock. You cannot, like, this man cannot and will not be confined.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's like, you can stay in your station, that's fine. Me, I'm breaking out and I'm hiding every lock. Like, you're not gonna be able to classify me," which, you know, I fucking love.
Yep, that. We know. We know you're a very individualistic white man. We get it.
I like the line, hide your feelings. Now what you better do, I'll take your girlfriend and put that pussy on a pedestal. Bitch, don't kill my vibe. And then he's turning into a female voice during this. Did you notice that? It's shit. Like, there was always like a female in the background, but on that line, he's turning into the female voice is becoming more prevalent and less male. Did you notice that?
I didn't notice it in that, like, full way. I just am attuned to, like, Kendrick does a lot of voice work, like a lot of voice changey stuff that he does. Yeah. So, like, I noticed, but, like, keep going.
I like that cool ambient strings outro.
Yeah.
This is one I could see putting on and just kind of nodding along to. This is a good one. I like this. This should be an Oxcore choice.
This is an Oxcore choice for sure.
Yeah.
Till you get embarrassed at a Taco Bell.
You should have just owned it. I think this is a present tense Kendrick talking. We set up our narrative with Shireen, and now we're present tense to me when we get into our rhymes here, because he's talking about the industry, right? I'm trying to keep it alive and not compromise the feeling we love. You're trying to keep it deprived and only co-sign what radio does, and I'm looking right past you. So, like, he's talking to this industry in one way, but it's also just always about, and I think this is, like, going to be a reoccurring theme, and it is, and very named in one song, of keeping it real, like being real. And that becomes real in a very complex way. And so that's what he's constantly pushing. I like the line, I can say that I like a challenge and you tell me it's painless. You don't know what pain is. How can I paint this picture when the colorblind is hanging with you? Colorblind can mean, like, two things or more than one thing in that line. And I like that a lot. Because, right, he's playing with this painting and painless and whatnot in a picture. But then he's like, so, like, you're colorblind. And, like, the very clear way of, like, I'm painting with these pictures and you can't see color, right? Like, that's it. But then also we get this other layer that could exist of, like, I'm painting a picture of this blackness, like, this life, and you can't see it because you're trying to be colorblind, right? Air quotes around colorblind when it comes to Rick. So I don't know if that's what he meant. Like, I would never know that. But I like that, like, possibility for that was kind of fun for me. And I think he does that kind of stuff often, in which it's like, it could mean like one or two different things. Both of them work. He names, I know what you're scared of, the feeling of emotions inferior. I was like, he's just going to go for the gut. Like, he's just going to call the people out. Yeah. And I love, and you mentioned it too, the hide every lock. I think this has a lot to do with, like, Kendrick's character of, like, one, he doesn't want to be defined, but the hiding every lock also has to do with, like, a freeing of other people. Right? Like, you also won't have
I
to,
was thinking
right?
That too.
Like, I'm trying to break us all free. I'm going to break free and then I'm going to take every other lock, right? No one else is getting locked up into something.
I like blazing the trail for sure. Yeah. I like that too. Like, it wasn't breaking every lock. It's hiding every lock. Of course, it's a choice.
On this outro, we've got to get a pack of blacks and a beat CD. Get your freestyles ready, baby. I have questions. Have you ever freestyled?
I am not going to do it now.
Oh, please don't.
I can freestyle.
You can. You say you actively can. Okay.
I actively can. I do it well, but what always happens is I get like 90 seconds in and then I make myself laugh and I can't keep going.
Ah, okay.
I got between 60 and 90 seconds worth of bars, and then I paint myself in a corner and I say something stupid and I laugh. But I can do it for like 60 seconds.
Okay. I'll give you that. All right. Have you ever smoked a pack of blacks?
Black and Milds?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have.
Nice. Okay. So you're like kind of there. You would be ready for this moment in which we run to this next song. You ready for it?
Oh, it was good. I like this song a lot. This is really, really good. This is another Oxcord choice. He talks about Martin had a dream. And at first I was like, man, he really enjoyed that episode of Martin. But I was like, oh, wait.
Damn you.
And then I realized it was definitely Martin Luther King. And I was like, all right. So he goes, Martin had a dream. Kendrick's got a dream. I'm like, okay, so he's equating himself with Martin Luther.
Yes, I knew you were going to say something about this. Yes.
Arguably one of the most respected black men to have ever existed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Or at least most influential. So powerful by equating yourself with him, for sure. And then he starts with this fucking wind-up that I love.
Oh, okay, give it to me.
All my life I want money and power. Oh! I immediately was on board.
Mm-hmm.
All my life I want money and power, respect my mind or die from lead shower. I pray my dick gets big as the Eiffel Tower so I can fuck the world for 72 hours.
Ah! God damn.
72 hours. Why that amount of And I was like, okay, but why 72 hours?
Right, he could have said any amount of hours there.
I was like, why 72? But I love that wind up. And it's got this cool industrial sounding drums and these like crunchy chimes, and it sounds like a buildup of like a gathering army. Like I loved
it. Oh, it goes.
I don't know. It felt inspiring or something.
Which is so funny because it's
loves Jesus too.
All I love is money and power, but it's inspiring. You're like, yes.
And then, yeah. So he goes, damn, I got bitches. Wifey, girlfriends, and a mistress. Let's define these terms. So what makes it, what defines a wifey, a girlfriend, mm-hmm. and a mistress?
Yeah. Okay. So if we wanted to be very,
I don't know,
very, very like straightforward with it, it would be wife as in like actually married.
Who you're married to.
Then a girlfriend. And then a mistress would be a person that you are sleeping with. I actually think it's more like wifey, girlfriend, and mistress, which means you're talking to three women at the same time. One of them is a person that you hope to commit to later in life. Another person is a person that you like being around and is like, it is a relationship. Maybe not the person you're trying to end with, not the person. So that rhetoric happens. And then mistresses, you know, that person that what do they call them these days? Sneaky link, right? Like you're like, yo, we're going to.
I'm sorry, what?
A sneaky link. It's your hookup. Because now it, like we say link up, right? So then a sneaky link is just, you see. Okay, so Jamie's just like shrugging and going like, I don't know.
Too much.
And I will tell you, because this also came out while I was in high school, that line resonated with me really well.
Okay. Next line I wrote down is 25 lighters on my dresser. Yes, sir. Put fire in that ass, body cast on a stretcher. And so those are lighters as guns, like heat, like packing heat. Yes.
Yes. Burn? Sorry. Yeah. I'm just,
okay. I did it.
I realized you started saying the verse and I was just dancing. I was like, yeah, that's
And then I said, it's fucking go time, style change up again. I fucking dig it. He says, I look like OJ killing everything from pussy to a motherfucking hit boy beat. She pussy popping. And I got options like Audible, IBCOMPTON, win then ball at your defeat, COMPTON, my city mobbing in the street, yelling, and I go, holy fucking shit.
Yes.
That whole line was just like, so vicious and coming, like.
It does not
So in
stop.
The same song, mm-hmm. let's just keep score. He says, I love Jesus. He's comparing himself to Martin Luther King and OJ Simpson and bringing up the murder.
Yep.
This dude don't give a fuck.
I do whatever I want. That's a freestyle. You go where you go. All right.
Ends it again with Martin had a dream, Kendrick had a dream. So he's really sandwiching all of that and making sure we know he's comparing himself to Martin Luther King.
He's a king.
And notice how he didn't make himself laugh once.
Yeah, this is Oxcord choice for sure. This goes hard. These are bars. He's just going in. But it's also, we're back at 16-year-old hood rat shit. Like, he is going in. He's saying some shit. I knew you were going to say something about him equating himself to Martin. Love that. The line we talked about where it was, all my life I want money and power, respect my mind, or die from lead showers, is actually a really cool line because it's double meaning, right? Lead showers can mean from the gun or from the pen, from the pencil.
Ah, okay.
So that's dope.
Okay. I definitely thought it was
gun. Oh, it's supposed to be mostly gun, but it's like, that's what we like, is this extra layer of like what else it could be. And he does it a lot in a way that makes it feel like it must be intentional, right? Like, people go to Kendrick looking for those kind of hints. because he does it so often, right? Because it could mean that, and he won't tell you if it does or doesn't, right? Like, and so it feels intentional in that way. Oh, okay. And he's got the line, and her body got that ass that a ruler couldn't measure, and I make me come fast, but I never get embarrassed. But I was like, excuse me, sir. I thought you were like a porn star. They know what they're doing. So someone's lying. Oh, I also love the way he says biatch.
Biatch!
You know, biatch! And yeah, I'm never living life confined. As I feel you, even if I'm blind, I can tell you who, what, when, where, how to sell your game right on time. Biatch! Go play. And I just, I don't know. I just love that.
Go play.
So that is a song that I revisit from time to time. Like, it is a song I put back on.
Definitely see the appeal of that one. Next up, we got The Art of Peer Pressure. I love how he takes control of the room from jump. It's like, everybody, sit your bitch ass down and listen to this motherfucking story told by Kendrick Lamar. Like, I was like, wow. It was just such a change up from the last thing where it's like, listen up. It grabs your attention and says,
oh, it's story time, baby.
And there's a big change when the music starts musically and lyrically, and it seems hurried with this fast energy. And he says, me and my pretzels, four deep in a white Toyota, a quarter tank of gas, one pistol, and orange soda. And my question to you is, if he's rolling four deep, could one of his friends be Kel Mitchell? Who's
God damn it, who loves orange soda?
Oh man. I trusted you. I knew it. I'm glad it landed. You don't know what it means to win. Sad Boys Jamie and Caleb here. Thanks for tuning into this episode of The Other Side of the Tracks.
We just wanted to take a second to thank some folks before we jump back into the episode.
First off, thank you to the Melker Project for the use of their arrangement of Never Going Down Again. Scope them out on YouTube for more great arrangements.
We also want to thank our sponsors for today's episode. If you want to help keep the lights on over at Sad Boy HQ, you can do so either via our Patreon at patreon.com/othersideofthetracks. Or shoot us an email at othersideofthetrackscast@gmail.com. Your support means the world to us.
If you're unable to financially support... Oh, wait, shit, I was going to make a joke.
Keep that in. That's funny.
If you're unable to financially support, you can always share us with someone you think would enjoy us.
Our sponsors for today's episode are Caleb, the Negro artist Rainey. That's me. Who has a couple of poetry books out. The first one is Look Black Boy. The second is Heart Notes. You can also get the first spoken word album, Look Black Boy, on my website, thenegroartist.com.
The other sponsor is Editor Taylor's podcast, The Tantalus Tales, a real play story-driven D&D podcast. Scope it out wherever you find podcasts.
Thanks again for listening. We love hearing from you listeners, so feel free to reach out to us via social media. Enjoy the rest of the show.
Hello, my name is Taylor. I am the DM and lore master of the Tantalus Tales, a real-play D&D podcast following the misadventures of three unlikely heroes across the universe.
So, who wants to save the world?
Am I getting paid for this?
Shut up, Picard. Yes.
Well, I'd say that if the world is gone, we probably won't get paid.
Can I give it to my god?
I mean, ideally, no.
Alright, so are we just going to solve this in our usual method, you guys?
So, you guys try to sneak, and when you get caught, I kill them?
More or less. Let's just drench the flagstones in blood like we normally do.
Do we want to do help me?
I'm okay with the quest that I'm currently on. I'm not here to save the world.
The car, I swear to God, any god, you're going to get it.
Join us for more misadventures on the Tantalus Tales, wherever you find podcasts.
The next line I pulled out, I liked hotboxing like George Foreman grilling the masses. And I just made me think that there really was a time when everyone had a George Foreman grill. And he had to have made more money off of that grill than he ever did with boxing. And, like, good for him. We get to a line when he says 2:30 and the sun is beaming. I definitely thought it was nighttime. And he says, seeing some other guys wearing the wrong colors in the wrong part of town. So, yeah, we're talking about gang shit.
Yep.
Like,
yep.
I know that can be upsetting to one gang if there's colors strongly associated with one and not the other. I think, I don't know the designation between Crips and Bloods, but I know one's like red and one's blue.
Yeah, so
think about that for a fucking second.
All right, I just heard it. The Bloods are red. Everybody relax. I don't spend a lot of time thinking about it.
Privilege.
And I like this line. I had to fucking Google this. He says, I was never a stranger to the funk neither. F-O-N-K. And it seems like a catch-all nondescript word. It's just like a beatly boo, like a single. Like it's a nothing. Like it's a nondescript word. It's like the Pokemon Ditto or Tofu. It just takes on the form of whatever the sentence needs it to
right,
be.
You get it. It's that. Sorry.
So there's that part where he's saying, me and the homies, and that's Kendrick. And then that big dark voice comes in saying, bullshit and acting the fool tripping.
Yeah.
Just run. That's the voice of peer pressure. And him being like, just me and the homies.
Yep.
Like that's him wanting to be around friends. But then that peer pressure is coming. Mm-hmm. Something he doesn't want to admit to himself. He starts talking about like a breaking and entering scenario. Like he's going into somebody's house and stealing their shit. And of course, you know, I know that I like the first instinct was that he tried to find anything Nintendo.
Yep. Try to find the Nintendo.
I was like, that's my guy. And then we pop back in with these recordings, this skit work where they're talking back and forth about what they're going to do after. Mm-hmm. They make mention of Shireen. Still no TMNT. And then the phrase that's one of the most misogynist things I've ever heard pops up. Kendrick mentions he's trying to hook up with Shireen. Yeah. And somebody says, I'm trying to fuck on something too. Something. Not I'm trying to bang someone. I'm trying to fuck someone. I'm trying to fuck on something. Deeply upsetting.
And then also, if you end up being that something, how are you gonna feel?
That's what I'm saying. Imagine in an album in 2012 being equated with a thing. You're like, what's your equipment?
Yep.
Being a thing.
Here's the thing. Just trying to fuck on something too. No.
Different culture. No judgment really, but just like blatant.
Yeah. No, it's not good. It's not good. It's not good. Yeah. Can't get around that.
That's what I got on that.
Yeah, this one's so funny to me because I'll put it on and feel like I relate to it a lot. Where it's like, I'm not usually violent, but I'm with the homies, right? I'm not usually like this, but I'm with the homies. Like it just like keeps happening. Very much a high school vibe. Yeah, and so this is, and then yeah, this is our story time, which I really love. They're cruising around, they do the things. They holler at a girl, they stop by a liquor store, they see the dudes repping and they jump them is what I understand. And then they rob a house and then they go, all right, what are we up to tonight? Which is kind of funny because it's I like that you were like, I'm glad I didn't know it was 2:30 in the afternoon. But I mean, we've got mom calling because she's trying to get to the...
Right. An appointment.
Yeah.
She's going to miss a motherfucking appointment.
I like it a lot because it establishes these characters of Kendrick and his relationship to the world and his peers, but also allows for this introspection of like, I'm not usually like this, right? And feeling that divide between like action and internal person and what are they doing and what are they trying to do and who they really want. They also reference just Jeezy's first album. This is the one they're listening to in the car. It's like, let's get it. Thug Motivation 101 is what that album's called. Last I heard, I'm the man in these streets. So like, that's that. That makes sense.
Thug Motivation
101. You gotta learn that shit.
101. Okay. Yeah, yeah. Okay. We got Money Trees. I like the ambient strings and birds chirping. Definitely wasn't expecting that after what we just heard. And then he's got a bunch of lines that end with ya bitch.
Oh,
hit this house, tell me with it, ya bitch, ya bitch. And I thought it was, upon first listen, I thought he was saying like, ya bitch, but he was just saying it in like a different way. But ya bitch really means like, you feel me? Or like, you got it? Ya bitch? Do you bitch? And for all my nerds out there, it basically means to grok. Like to understand intuitively or through empathy. Like I grok.
Wow, that you stranger lost me there. Yeah, that you. This is wow.
Oh, I know. So it's a term. So to grok is a term that was coined by Robert Highland in 1961 through his book, Stranger in a Strange Land, where an alien comes to Earth or vice versa. Doesn't fucking matter. But when he starts saying this word, like, to grok, like children understand things, or children grok things early because of commercials. Like, they see things and start understanding, and they just understand intuitively and emotionally. You bitch.
Interesting. You grok? All right. You learn something new every day.
Didn't think we'd ever get to Highland. of course, the line, the one in front of the gun lives forever.
In front of the gun lives forever.
That was powerful. Like, it's fucked up and it's powerful. But that's kind of this whole album. Like,
yep.
Its power comes from its raw, personal look at what's happening and the relationship that he has to the hood, the game, the life, whatever you want to call it. And it's upsetting. Like, it's an upsetting look at this.
Yeah.
Kind of fucking shit.
It's a problem.
I like the lines, a dollar might just fuck your main bitch. That's just how I feel. Dollar might fuck them pretzels you came with. That's just how I feel. A dollar you might make the lane switch. That's just how I feel. A dollar might turn a million and we all rich. That's just how I feel. And that's all about just what people can and will do and how things change when money is introduced.
Mm-hmm.
In kind of a, especially in a community when maybe that money isn't, the next paycheck isn't a guaranteed thing, or we don't know how much it's going to be, or, you know, it changes your perspective and how people act in general, but also especially in that scenario.
For sure.
I liked when he said, gang signs out the window, hoping all of them offend you. Dope. I loved that. I love that just like brash boldness,
What? You got something to say?
Throwing up gang
what?
Signs, like, oh, huh? Did I offend you? Yeah. Oh, I like the line. Be the last one to get out of this dope. No,
yes.
Above one of your bucket head. What's a bucket head?
I don't know.
All right. Coming back.
I want to look it up now.
No way. Hit the streets. Hit the brakes when we on patrol.
No way.
No way. And then all female vocals. Did you notice that too?
Mm-hmm.
And then, okay. So here's where we get in. Are we defining bucket headed hoe?
Yeah, we have one already. Bucket headed hoe is a bitch with no sense, doesn't think, needs some act. Right? This hoe's so stupid, she a bucket-headed hoe.
Isolate that. That's my new ringtone. So then the line, this got me thinking. The line, my homeboy just domed a pretzel, I just hope the Lord forgive him. So we're talking about, he just shot somebody in the head.
Yep.
And it's this weird, odd relationship, which, keeping in mind where we are in the track listing, weird relationship with religion and gang life that I don't all the way understand, even after listening to this again.
Okay.
But there does seem to, let me see if I can get that. I think what it speaks to is there always being a way of being redeemed, and there's always a way of kind of getting out. Or like, you're doing what you gotta do to survive, but as long as you're paying penance, you might find a way out, or at the very least, if you die, you've got that insurance of being like, oh, well, he was religious. Like, he'll go to heaven. Maybe?
I don't think that Kendrick Lamar is offering up the idea that those two should live together in the same time. So, like, we've got it go Halle Berry or Hallelujah, right? So, like, Halle Berry to me is very attractive. So, right, we're talking women, we're talking indulgence, we're talking vices, we're talking going into this, or Hallelujah, or this, and then you have one or the other, and the choice is constantly there, and so he's constantly naming it. I don't think you're supposed to have one or the other, and I would actually argue in some later songs it makes it very clear that one is in opposition of the other, right? Like that they're clear choices. I think also in our same chorus we got Money Trees is a perfect place for shade, and that's just how I feel. So I think it's you can go get your money. Or you can have your hallelujahs, right? You can have your vices and the things that make your life better in this moment and like feel better in this moment. Or you can go have your hallelujah and money trees is a perfect place for shade. That's just how I feel. Like I'm choosing vices. I'm choosing that over hallelujah. But I think there's this constant recognition of like you choose these vices, but you're over there going, I see that too. Like I see it. I recognize it rather than going, that's hooky. That's dumb. You can't do that. It's like, I see it. I'm choosing this one. And so I think later in our narrative, we make a different choice, right?
Okay, sure. That makes sense. That makes sense to me. I like the line, broken promises, steal your watch and tell you what time it is, take your J's and tell you to kick it where the foot locker is. That made me laugh. We got the skit work coming back in where she's like, Kendrick, bring my car back. And I was like, dude, bring her car back. She's got an appointment that she keeps missing. And then, of course, the dude, this is his dad. This is mom and dad. And he's singing, I want your body.
That badass.
And I liked how it cut out of, did somebody say domino?
It's great. I don't have much more to say on Money Trees, really, but...
Should we go to Poetic Justice? So the first thing I wrote was like, is this a slow jams candidate? But I don't think it is.
Is it a slow jam?
It did have that kind of sexy style, and that, in the thundering rain, chipmunk style.
Yeah, look at you.
Is that a chipmunk? Yeah. I like the rapping. It was very confident.
Mm-hmm.
I like the line, when you're in the mood for empathy, there's blood in my pen. I'm not sure what that means, but I fucking love it. So cool.
Yeah, I actually thought about that line too, and I don't know. And I was accept
I don't know
that.
Either, but it just sounds awesome.
If you're looking for empathy, there's blood in my
blood
pen.
Blood in my pen. Yeah.
So that feels like you're taking a piece of yourself, putting yourself into the thing. You're having empathy is that. So you're like you're feeling it's empathy, you're feeling what they're feeling. So
that could be.
I genuinely don't know.
Fine interpretation to me. And then, of course, you know, I like the line, Pretzel, don't approach her with that Atari. Pretzel, that
I knew you were
going to
love
game
that.
Home, sorry.
Yes! I was like, I had to ask, yeah. Do you agree?
But Atari's got some...
That's okay. I needed to know.
No, there's some good games on Atari. Pitfall's a lot of fun. Kaboom is really fun. That's a...
Yo, so I'm about to step...
Dogger on Atari. There's some...
I'm about to step to her with a little Kaboom, you know? See how it goes.
Like Kaboom's fun. Maybe 5% of the entire Atari catalog is like playable. Everything else you wouldn't want to touch. You wouldn't want to waste your time.
You don't want the E.T.?
No, of course not. E.T. is Caleb, and for all the listeners who aren't mega nerds like Taylor and myself, E.T. was notoriously one of the worst. E.T., like the movie E.T., it was made for Atari, notoriously broken and rushed and a completely unplayable game, but they produced so many copies because they thought it was going to be such a big hit. That they wound up having to bury thousands of copies in a desert in Nevada.
Oh my god.
They did eventually find them.
Yeah, recently. If in case you're interested in Atari cartridges, there you go. Welcome to the podcast. Oh, I was so excited when Drake showed up. I was like, I know him!
We know him!
I was like, Drake? And I recognized it just from listening
to
him.
Oh, buddy, I am. Like, I'm proud of you.
I was like, I think this is Drake. Oh, and I was so happy. And then the line where he says, your big ass in that sundress. Woo! I felt that. Like,
We know. Mm. You're like, right. You almost got hit by a car.
I know that.
I
did. I like the line, but I can never write my wrongs unless I write them down for real.
Yes! That's a line I wrote. Yep.
He says, love is not just a verb. It's you looking in the mirror. Love is not just a verb. It's you looking for a maybe. Call me crazy. We can both be insane. Oh, wow. This is a long thing. I don't need to go through this.
Well, that's what happens is it's so hard to knock out like what parts of a lyric you want because they're all so interwoven and rhyme well and just like you get lost in it a bit.
Yeah, I took out that. That's way too long for me to fucking. Yeah, so much of his stuff are like mini essays.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is statement proven at the bottom and it just all comes together in a writing style that honestly I think I've been the most impressed with anybody that we've taken on.
People,
the two people I think I'm going to keep delving with. Are Frank Ocean and Kendrick Lamar. I've listened to Channel Orange so many fucking
hell times. Yeah.
I wound up loving it.
I think that's crazy. I wasn't expecting that and I love that. He writes so, it's all so intentionally feeling, right? Like it feels very crafted, I think is the word I want to say.
Yes. Great. Perfect. Then the last thing I have for this song is that weird confrontation at the end. Why does he want to know where my daddy stayed? Is that like collateral? Like what the fuck? Like, was it the kind of thing where it's like, fuck around, I know where your dad lives? Is that the kind of action this is?
It's the, I want to know where your daddy stay, where your grandma stay.
I want to know where your grammy
stay.
No, I don't want to tell you that, sir. Leave them out of this. This is between you and I.
That's the point. From my understanding of what happens in this story, he fucks around with Shireen at this Poetic Justice, right? This is what Kendrick actually names this, the Shireen joint. He goes, this is the Shireen joint. Like, this is the you know, poetic justice. Get with Shireen. It is our closest thing to a slow jam.
Poetic justice. Put it in a song.
Yes. And let's be clear. Everyone is singing this chorus, right? You can get it. You can get it. Okay. Right. Ah, yeah. Yeah. We're feeling it. What I believe happened.
Leave my dad alone.
No. We fuck with your whole people. So why are you in this neighborhood? Are you leaving old girl Shireen's house? What? You from around here? Where are you from?
I get it.
Where are you from, huh? Like, you shouldn't be
but
in
I
these
hate
parts.
It so much. I don't like that. It seems, okay, hang on. Stay with me. Like I get it. I understand it now, so I was pretty much correct in all
fairness.
Oh, yeah.
Let's get okay, right. You really want to own that. All right.
I hope the Bloods and Crips hear this because it seems childish.
Okay, I want you to get shot. I don't know what. Internally, I was like, beat up Jamie.
Come on.
Where you say, Jamie, then, huh?
Okay, but seriously,
where you say?
If unimportant, if I was...
Nah, if you're going to say some shit, you better be able to say where you from, huh?
But no, does that not seem a little childish to be like, hey, we're having the problem. You're going to go fuck with my grandma? Like, that's cold-blooded as shit. And maybe that's the game. Maybe that's the whole thing.
A little less like that and a little bit more... You get asked where you're from. If you don't answer, I'm amping it, right? Where your daddy stay? Where your grandma stay? Amping it up. Like, you're going to keep going, right? So if I ask you where you stay and you say, well, it's really, right? Then I'm not going to go, and where your daddy stay?
You motherfucker, you bleep that out.
But I'm not, right? Like, then I'm not going to go where your daddy stay. But the thing is, if you don't answer, it'd be like, oh, you don't have a place, but where your daddy stay then? Where your grandma stay? Because as we know, Shireen stays with her grandma, right? So it's like, who you staying with? Where are you at?
Where's your second cousin's grandma's uncle's roommate?
Yeah, if that's who you staying with.
Bill?
that's
all I had for Poetic Justice.
Gotcha. Poetic Justice is a vibe. We love it. It's good. Every time I write these words, they become a taboo. Making sure my punctuation curve, every letter here is true. Living my life in the margins. And that metaphor was proof, right? Now, what we've got here is my writer nerd self got like excited. It's excited about that line. So every time I write these words, they become a taboo. Making sure my punctuation curve, aka comma instead of a period, right? Keep going. Every letter here is true. Now, this could be a double meaning of like each letter, like literally in each word. Or if we think of this work as letters, right? Like you called them mini essays, right? But what if he calls them little letters, right? What if he calls them these confessional letters, right? Then every letter here is true, right? And so living my life in the margins, right? He's different. He's obviously showing that he's different. And that metaphor was proof, right? I don't know. I just love that line a lot. And I think there's a lot working in it. Like there's a lot of like fun writery things that exist in it. But yeah, outside of that, I think the end of this song is he gets stopped by two dudes who are going to beat his ass for being in the wrong neighborhood, which makes sense because earlier with the homies, they did the same thing. Two dudes repping the wrong colors, beat their ass. Like, it's just what we do.
Right.
That is poetic justice.
Just leave my grandma out of it.
Well, then you better tell him where you live.
Exactly.
I will not, sir.
All right. Well, the big bad wolf will find him.
Oh, wow.
I don't know.
We got a Grimm reference in here.
Oh, okay. We had a wolf, first of all, in Meatloaf. So it was there. It was fitting.
That's true. Will you give me your dentures and your ticket? I will. It's a good kid. We got that 70s funk feel and those deep, meaty fucking bass lines. Mm-hmm. I like the line, me jumping off the road is me just playing it safe. No, me jumping off the roof is me just playing it safe. What am I supposed to do when the topic is red or blue and you understand that I ain't? And I was like, oh, this is a Blood versus Crips thing.
Mm-hmm.
He's neither. He doesn't want it. He doesn't want to be a part of what he feels like he should or has to or feels pressured.
Yeah.
No better picture to paint than me walking from Bible study and called his homies because he had said he noticed my face from a function that was took in place. They was wondering if I bang, step on my neck, and get blood on your Nike checks. I don't mind because one day you'll all respect the good kid, Mad City.
Yeah.
That's the name of the album.
I just pulled that out as like a good, we have that intersection again of religion and gang life, yeah. which I thought was important, where he was coming from Bible study and people are saying, or basically saying like, oh, where's he from? Where's he going? What's he doing?
Where you stay?
What's the word on him? Right. Where you stay? Don't worry about it. It's my home. And then he makes another reference, and I couldn't believe this. So it says that when the lights are blinking red and blue, those are obviously cop car lights. And I love the duality between the cop car lights red and blue and the Crips and Bloods red and blue. And I was like, holy shit, is that where the Bloods and Crips colors come from? The red and blue lights?
Do we know? That, my thought is yes. Like, that's always been my thought, but that's like not a thing I know now, but yeah.
Okay. And then, oh, Jesus Christ, the line, step on his neck as hard as your bulletproof vest. Fuck does that, this is a cop detaining a fucking black man. I'm like, good God, does that line land in a devastating way in 2021?
Yep.
Fucking upsetting. Black folks have been saying this shit since 2012, bare minimum on record,
And this is a known album, right? Like, people are hearing this album.
Right. Like, stepping on, it just was like, it hit me like a fucking freight train. I was like, God damn. And then he goes on to say, all I see in this room are 20 Xannies, these shrooms growing up candy for pain. Can we live in a sane society? Talking about just how people need this escape through drugs and other means. Liquor, we'll come to in a moment.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of what it means to have to go, to live in these terrible streets in a sober way almost seems impossible.
Yeah.
Like, who's going to be able to...
Which, like, don't do you get it?
Without some sort of outside influence. Yeah!
Like, it just makes sense.
Yes! Jesus, it sounds...
You walked from Bible study, you got jumped. You're walking around, the police pull you up, they assume that you're part of a gang, and they're stepping on you with on your neck as hard as their bulletproof vest. Like, of course then you're going to want to go home and pop some shit. I don't...
Yeah. I mean, Jesus, I want to drink a strong... vodka soda at the end of a rough day for myself. Like, God damn, yeah, I guess you need some Xannies and whatever the fuck else. That's kind of all I have on that.
Yeah, one. I love this breakdown. This to me could have been, everybody gather around for the story. Like, it felt like that to me of like, I'm going to tell you this happened. Of course, this is where we are. I loved, you kind of hit everything I wanted to on this song. The line I liked from verse 3, which is where he's talking about like all the drugs that you're obviously going to want to do, is the line, you hired me as a victim, I quietly hope for change. That line meant something to me, because there was this concept of, you hired me as a victim, like there's this, like, and so when I do what you want, like I still end up that, but I still am hoping for change, but this is the job I've got. I don't know, it's like there's this interesting phrasing of that line that really intrigued me. But overall, yeah, you hit the whole thing. And this is what's funny about this is like depicting the good kid, right? And at the same time, how is the good kid interact with the Mad City? And then we've got our next song,
which is, of course, Mad City.
Hey.
It starts with the lines, if Pyrus and Crips all got along, they'd probably gun me down by the end of this song. So I'm thinking he's coming for them both in this song. And I was like, is this kind of like legitimately dangerous? Like, that would be like me saying something negative about the internet hacker group Anonymous, which I support fully all their endeavors. Like, I wouldn't want to shit talk those people.
Mm.
Once again, we got somebody asking where my grandma stay. Leave my family out of this.
I like how protective you are of your family.
Really, like, my grandma's dead. I really like the synth organ background. I also like that he gives kind of a thesis statement for what he's about to talk about consistently. I kind of said that before with the essay comment, but just he gives you a little bit of what he's going to go into, and then he delves. And I feel like he's telling real stories. Oh, God, that story about, he says, the light-skinned pretzel with his brains blown out, same burger stand where bleep hangs out. He suspected it was one of his friends, and he could never look at him. And he was 9 years old when that happened?
Yep.
Like, this is some bleak,
dark. This is a mad fucking city.
It's really upsetting to hear. Like, I'm not sure if this is like a call to arms or something, but Jesus Christ, if you heard a 9-year-old had seen somebody with their brains splattered on all over Culver's, you'd be horrified. And this is some sort of part of normalcy for a 9-year-old's life. It's deeply disturbing. fuck you shooting for if you ain't walking, you fucking punk? Picking up the fucking pump, picking off your sucker, suck a dick or die for sucker punch. Wall of bullets coming for you, AKs, ARs, A-y'all duck. That's what Mama said when we was eating that free lunch. I said, oh man, goddamn, all hell breaks loose. All of this sounds like a fucking nightmare. Yep. Like a sincere nightmare.
And it's so raw. Like it's being just upfront about it.
Yeah. It was interesting being confronted with that. And there's always, I feel like I say this every episode, but this, I wasn't ready for that kind of stuff. I don't know how to put it, but just like this information being presented to me in this way is extremely upsetting.
Which is kind of the hope, right? Yeah, that's what they're going for.
Right. Then we got a big change up. Big musical change up, and he talks about he takes a security job and then robs.
Yes,
after
Well, I have.
My
pop said I needed a job. I thought I'd believe him. Security guard for a month and ended up leaving. In fact, I got fired because I was inspired by all my friends to stage a robbery the third Saturday I clocked in. No, don't do that.
not even. Give it more time. And then he said his first blunt was laced with coke and had him foaming at the mouth.
Shenanigans.
That sounds like something that would happen to me with my luck. So I'm glad that's never happened to me. So the line that stuck out to me was, the hood took me under, so I follow the rules. Okay. So this is kind of my thought. The hood, the streets, gang life, whatever you want to call it, I feel like gives a place or purpose to people that feel rejected by society or they don't have a place. So all these rules and what they do to survive or get along looks so insane to us looking in from the outside, but they're so grateful to have a perceived purpose or direction, they're willing to die and kill to keep it going.
Yep.
Which is problematic. Like
it ends up being then cyclically a problem, right? Like,
yeah, right. It's like,
Which is why we've got Kendrick breaking out and hiding all the locks, right? Like this is, the idea is to be breaking this cycle, but it is very clearly a mad, insane, crazy cycle that at the same time, Kendrick is almost never passing judgment. He's never going, they're dumb for doing this. We shouldn't be doing this. Like this sucks. Like this is, see how crazy this is. Look how crazy this is. This is crazy. But not being like, you're a bad person because you do it. Or like, you know, that. So there's this interesting thing that he does with that. But it is cyclically just a problem. You buy into the crazy and then you go, we're crazy. At least I'm going to be good in the crazy, or I'm going to be successful in the crazy or whatever.
Right. It's just such a bummer to think about that people are surrounded by this madness, by being in this city. It makes me think of, there's this one line in The Wire, my favorite season is season 4, which it focuses on the school system in Baltimore, and there are these kids who are like 9, 10, 12 years old, somewhere in there, middle school age, and they're getting pulled into like the drug game, and this one kid who's really smart, like wants to keep going to school, but also needs to provide money for his family, and the kids are pulling him in, like, oh, you going to school today? What you gonna be? Rocket scientist? Come on, Pretzel.
Yeah.
And they get him going. And I'm like, fuck. It's just like that blatant or more pressing want and need. It's like, yeah, I would like to go to school and I would like to get a good education, but like, I got to eat tonight. What
am I going to do here?
What am I going to do? Just deeply.
Well, because the thing is, delayed gratification is tough when you're going to die. Right. Like when you can't afford to delay your gratification. Mad City, I also like the line that this is the first time Kendrick calls himself the Compton's human sacrifice. So I think he's kind of going out to do this. Two things I want to say about this song specifically is, one is he says, you know, they're both kind of coming at him is what the chorus is, right? And the concept is because he's kind of snitching here, right? Like that's really what it is. He's calling out the crazy. And so that's what, like, if they came up against it, like the whole city would go against him. So there's that. And then, also, I just think it's important to name that this song is a lot of people's aux chord choice at a party.
Really?
White people put this song on often.
No.
Yep. They really, really like the chorus and the yeah. They bump their fist pump and they just really fucking love this song. Have they ever listened to any of the lyrics?
I am.
No. But that is, so I needed to name that in this space, is that really does happen. Like, this is, you'll have a crowd of people and it's just like, yeah. And they just love this song. And you know, they're just like not listening to the verse at all. And they come back for that, which is also still talking about gang violence, but whatever. It's still talking about gang, but they just like love it. And I just want to name how upsetting that is. All right. But next song.
We got Swimming Pools. Pour up, drink, sit down,
drink,
stand up,
drink.
So, again, I think another song that may have been appropriated. It's talking about alcoholism and people living their life in the bottles. Some people drink to kill their sorrows. Some people just want to fit in. He's talking about saying, Pretzel, why are you babysitting only one or two shots? I'm going to show you how to turn it up a notch. Yep. And I was like, oh, I wonder how he's going to turn up. Just a notch.
Jake, what's a little notch
from one or two? Yeah, what's a little more than two or three shots? And he goes, you get a swimming pool of liquor and then you dive in. And I was like, that's more than a notch. That's several dial rotations. You don't
really get in there.
Quite an escalation. I really liked when his conscience shows up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that little voice, self-preservation voice, saying like, okay, you've had enough. And he's saying like, you have one more drink. Either he's not going to have to worry about his conscience anymore, so I don't know if one more drink is getting rid of his thought, or if it's more dark, like he might...
Which might be both, right?
Which might be both. Feeling the vibe of those drinks getting in you and feeling good and seeing the love in her eyes.
Mm-hmm.
You've been at the place when like the booze hits and you're suddenly the most like handsome.
Hey, you don't know where I've been, but yes.
And funny man alive. And I understand. I understand how that can be... addictive, that feeling of just being like free and great and like you're the fucking
like
man.
Come on now, hey.
And then next thing I wrote is Shireen is back.
Shireen.
Which is nice.
We missed her. Shireen. We're too busy dealing with the mad city.
So all this time we've been saying pool full of liquor and then we dive in, pool full of liquor and then we dive in, and then we have this change up where it says pool full of liquor, I'm a die in it.
Mm-hmm.
Where he's kind of he's kind of aware of what he's doing to himself and how he's acting and kind of the consequences that can come of that.
Yeah.
The next line I wrote down that I really liked is, all I have in life is a new appetite for failure. And I got hunger pain that grow insane. Tell me, did that sound familiar? If it do, when you're like me, make an excuse for your relief. Is it the bottom of the bottle or the greenest Indo leaf?
Yes, that's the line I wrote. That's the line I was like, this explains it.
And then, of course, at the end, that skit and the gunshots.
Them niggas killed my brother.
Somebody's brother, Dave. Was it killed my brother, Dave?
Yeah.
I was like, damn. So, yeah, that's
yeah, kind of... that's, you hit all the things I wanted to hit on Swimming Pool. You pulled out that specific line is the one that I really wanted to sit with, because that's a good line. This ends up also being a party pick. Which is weird because it's very clearly anti-drinking. Like it's very clearly like drinking is a bad thing. Drinking ends up being a problem. You die. But people just do not listen. So that's a thing that's really fun about white people. But yeah, at the end we've got Dave gets shot, right? They're literally making plans to go scare these dudes. They're like, we're gonna run up, we're gonna shoot at them, they're gonna run, it's
right,
gonna scare.
Right.
Like they're literally in the middle of making these plans, and then someone rolls up on them and shoots at them and then kills Dave, right? So like, it is so interesting,
right?
Because we feel bad, but at the same time, they were gonna go scare some people and maybe kill them, right? Like accidentally, if it was gonna happen. Right. So like, there's something crazy about that. But yeah, that moves us directly into this next song.
Sing About Me, I'm Dying of Thirst. Mm-hmm. It starts with this very happy, upbeat sound that I thought was a little odd after Dave being killed. And interesting that he's dying of thirst after talking about drinking.
Mm-hmm.
And that made me think, is some of this from Dave's perspective? And it seems like not quite as...
It's more contradictory, right? It's like you keep drinking something that actually doesn't quench your thirst. You kept going to the bottom of this bottle that did not give you what you kept wanting, right? Or needing. But we obviously get somewhere different in this song.
Right. And it seems like not quite a suicide note, but he wants to get everything out there in case he's not here tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what I think he's doing is he's going to go out and kill the people who killed Dave. Because he said he's got a demon glued to my back whispering, get him. And that was like really... powerful image, like an all-consuming thought of this demon on your back saying, get him, And then that line, if I die before your album drop, I hope I...
Yep, and then there it is.
The gunshots. And I was like, Jesus Christ.
It's...
Then he starts rapping from the perspective of a sex worker. And it makes me think that she knew who Dave was as well. Because they make some reference to her knowing him through a cousin or a friend. I said, oh, wow, this is a long song.
So wait, really quick, some background on verse two with the sex worker. The woman who's a sex worker, she's actually referencing a person who is written about in a previous album or mixtape by Kendrick Lamar, right? And which she talks about this woman dying, right? And because of sex work and whatnot. And so this is the sister of that going, talking about, you wrote about my sister. So we've got, you know, our death, our verse one is our suicide note of like, hey, like, write about me, but like, yo, this is, I'm about to go do this, right? And he gets shot. Verse two is the sister going, and you wrote about this other person who died, and she's not super happy about it, but we can talk about that a little bit more. Keep going.
Okay. The next thing I had was, sometimes I look in the mirror and ask myself, am I really scared of passing away? If it is today, I hope I hear a cry out from heaven so loud it can water down a demon with the Holy Ghost till it drown in the blood of Jesus. I feel like he's putting everything he's got into this album. Like, it has the feeling of, if this is the last thing I do, and he just fucking went for it. And I feel like it comes out across the board in this entire
album. Yep.
Oh, this is fun. The next line, maybe because I'm a dreamer and sleep is the cousin of death. I really like
yes.
that because in Neil Gaiman's Sandman comic book series, death is the cousin of sleep.
Like, you're such a
death
nerd.
Death and dream are personified. Yeah. I don't give a shit. It's fun. Yeah, so like death and dream are personified and they're cousins. And I know you like this line too, fighting for your rights even when you're wrong.
Yep.
I thought in this song he was rapping as various people he knows who died. Is that possible?
So yeah. So I think that he's writing, or people who are, I mean, maybe even closer to it. So I think the brother does die. I don't know if the sister dies in the second verse, but I do think it is about these other lives that aren't his. He has this line that says, I count lives all on these songs, look at the weak and cry, pray one day you'll be strong. And then fighting for your rights, even when you're wrong, and hope that at least one of you sing about me when I'm gone. Am I worth it? Did I put enough work in? Right. So it is really very much, I count these lives, like all these songs are my life and other people's lives. They matter. I'm putting them here. And I think I do really like you said, fighting for the rights, even when you're wrong. I think it really was like they're gangbanging, which like is not right, but their lives matter. Right. And so I'm fighting for it each time I'm making a song. So, yeah. So I think he brings those stories in the space. Yep.
I can understand the appeal of religion to get people out of this lifestyle. Mm. I feel like I came too hard for it.
Yeah, you did.
I want it to be known. I want it to be known that I think religion has a place in this world for people who want and need it. And I personally reject that it's an absolute truth or that everyone needs it. But the people who use it to be like filled up with love and spread it in this world, more power to you. Jesus it up.
Jesus it up.
If it brings you... So that's me kind of pumping the brakes on this education.
I would say religion is like so very prevalent in this album, as you see later with our, is it this skit or is it? Yeah. At the end of this, it's not treated the same as Miseducation of Lauryn Hill. Like it's so interesting how they're both talked about kind of differently. Did you have more thoughts on this 12-minute song? I just wanted to say it did beat Bat Out of Hell.
No.
Yeah, at the end we have Maya Angelou who leads the religious prayer.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
was right.
So she leads that, gets them to be saved, I guess. I think one of the like raw lines is like, fuck, I'm tired of this shit. I'm tired of fucking running. I'm tired of this shit. My brother, homie. Like there's
hunting my own
power. Yep. That line I think is raw and real and in there and exposing. And so just wanted to name that. But yeah, then we've got the next one here.
Real, which I have to ask you, Caleb, how real is it?
That does feel a little petty, but he's really, really real.
I love how he raps.
That's this. It. Yeah.
It's so unique. You love him. You love them. You love her. You love so much. You love when love hurts. Like, it's just this. I said he's rapping with a cadence with this song. It's a cool intersection of singing and rapping without ever fully singing. And it's not like anything I've heard before. Of everything you love the beef, you love the streets, you love running, ducking police, you love your hood. It's just, I don't know. I don't even know how to describe
it. It's so good. It's just good. It's fantastic. And it hooks. I would say some other things on this song so first verse is about, what is it again? Is it a woman? And then the second verse is a man. And right, like the you love this, you love this. And each verse is about things that you love. And then the third verse is him just like being vulnerable and being like, yo, I'm not judging you. The reason why I know you well is because we have the same eyes, can't you tell? It's like, I've done the same thing. So I think this is a song that comes right after the I am changing my ways for the Lord to, hey, but I'm real. Like, I'm real with you still. Like, the reason I love you and the reason that I like is because I see that. I've been there. But what does it mean if you don't love yourself? Right? Like, what is love if you don't love yourself?
What is love when you don't love yourself? And I like that he had the kind of self-reflection of being like, to the point I should hate everything I do. Live my life inside the club. Watch for that reason. Hate from telling me that I'm seasoned. Hate them for telling me I ball out. Taking all this money, power, respect, and will. So I think it's just him reflecting on kind of the traps you can fall into in success.
Yeah.
Or ways that you find relief out of this mad city. But it does end with a fucking baptism. Like, this is him getting out.
Yep.
Right? He's flying out of there like a bat out of hell.
Damn you.
When he's saying, sing my song, it's all for you. Mm-hmm. Sing my song, it's all for you. It reminded me of Mama Say, Mama Say, Mama Say. Remember that?
Oh, I know that.
The last thing I want to say about this album, or this song, I loved where this skit ended. This very intimate and quiet, desperately sweet of a love that a mother has. There was something about when she says, if I don't hear you knocking, you know where the key will be. It's just like, it's such a mother thing to say. Yep. Just like, I want you home, I want you safe, and I'll be listening for you knocking, but if I don't hear it, here's how to get in. It's just like,
yep.
Like,
you so got home and I love you, right? I got you no matter what.
Yes.
I really love the dad's voicemail too, of any nigga can kill a man that don't make you a real nigga. Real is responsibility. Real is taking care of your motherfucking family. Real is God. Like that, like this, like, what is real? And be that. I like that too.
I'm bringing home Domino's.
Where are Domino's at? And this time he means pizza. So this song is the end of our narrative, I would say, right? This is our home of that. All right, so that was Good Kid, Mad City and Bat Out of Hell. First, we got to know, is Kendrick coming to brunch, my man? Is he invited?
I think Kendrick Lamar is coming to brunch. I think.
You think he's religious enough?
I don't think the religion helps. The religion helps for sure. I think his content is not offensive. Like, there's really not, I mean, we got some pussies in there, we got some trying to fuck on something, but overall his shtick isn't really like confrontational or really all that explicit, if I'm being honest. Like, it's hard to hear. I would say it's a difference between an R-rated like Something About Mary and an R-rated Saving Private Ryan. Like, they're both like mature content, but one's much more discussable and you can have an opinion on, as if not as like crass or childish or something. So I think where a lot of people wouldn't get invited to brunch because of those aspects, he doesn't have to worry about. And his work is just so well thought out and interesting. Mm-hmm. I think people would want to talk more with him, honestly.
He would easily hold it like a engaging conversation.
Yes.
Yeah.
What about Meatloaf? Is Meatloaf, buddy, Meatloaf coming, buddy, to the cookout? Come on.
Okay, well, he does play Meatloaf football, and that helps. I love the album so much, but I just, something in me says no. He's just like a really big white guy.
Meatloaf.
Like, he's just a really big white guy, and it just doesn't.
You're missing out. He'd bring a side dish that would impress everybody. Mm-hmm. Look at him. He knows how to season his shit.
I don't know. I'm buying it.
I'm not trying to advocate for him.
Right, because you don't have a place to do so, Jamie.
now we declare a winner.
The better album.
I mean, I think the better album is Good Kid, Mad City, honestly. Just because, and it's always going to win out for me every single time. It seems riskier. It seems more honest. It seems like there's just so much more to delve into there. Even though I will more than likely listen to Bat Out of Hell again and enjoy it, I think Good Kid, Mad City is a better album.
I think if I was introduced to both albums in my and life at the same time, that I would probably listen to Bat Out of Hell more right now in my life. Like, I would probably play it.
Wow.
One, it's probably because it's like more accessible and appropriate and like not raw all the time. but I do think Good Kid is just got the complexity. It is just there. So yeah, I'll give it to Good Kid. We giving it to Good Kid?
Giving it to Good Kid.
Okay.
Well done, Good Kid. You're a great kid. So the album you're going to be listening to next is Dave Matthews Band, Under the Table and Dreaming. I am not a big Dave Matthews fan, but there's absolutely no way I can be hosting this podcast as a white man and not give you a Dave Matthews.
Yeah, I've heard of that. That sounds white. All right. I haven't heard it, so we'll see what that's like. I'm going to give you, I don't know why, I just feel like it. That's the real answer to this. Confessions by Usher.
Ooh, okay. Have I ever mentioned my little weird connection to
No.
Usher? So my dad, who was a police officer in D.C., he was partners with Usher's uncle.
Oh, wild. Okay.
Which one's Confessions? Is that his debut?
I'm actually not sure on that. I don't think so.
Because I'm excited. Oh, that's the one with, yeah. I know that one. Yeah, I don't think I know anything
which
else
is funny
here,
to me. Yeah.
Under the table and breathing. Oh, yeah.
All right.
All right. So, folks, that is going to wrap it up for this episode of The Other Side of the Tracks. My name is Jamie Driscoll. You can follow me at the Mr. Driscoll on Twitter and Other Side Tracks on Twitter as well. And please, anybody listening, if you have my number, you can text me all your opinions about. I love hearing from everybody. Have you guys been hearing from folks? I love
yeah.
when people tell me about what they're thinking and feeling.
Yep. And this is, I'm Caleb, the Negro artist, Rainey. You can find me on social media as the_Negro artist and also at my website, thenegroartist.com. And yeah, this has been The Other Side of the Tracks. Thanks for listening with us, y'all. We are always having a blast.
All right. Until next time, we'll see you on the other side.
Are we going to start saying that?
I want to.
All right.
That's it.
Fantastic.
How long was that?